Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novick. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Ishut Perek Tet Zayin. Until this point, the focus of Hilchot Ishut, as the name of the halachot suggests, has been the relationship between husband and wife. The next eight prakim have a very different flavor, as the focus shifts to monetary matters associated with marriage and the obligations of the husband's estate after his death. Our long perek discusses details of how the ketubah is collected when the marriage ends. Recall that there are two types of women who collect a ketubah, a gerusha, divorcee, and an almana, a widow. As we'll see soon, there are significant differences between these women in the collection of the ketubah. The beginning of our perek notes that the text of the ketubah typically lists more than the ikar and the tosefet owed by the husband to the wife, and clarifies what parts of the ketubah the details of our perek refer to. Halacha Aleph. Hanachasim shemachneset ha'isha levala, bein karka, bein avadim, bein metaltalin, aval pi sheinichtavin bishtar ketubah, einan nikra in ketubah, ela nidunya shmam. V'im kibel habal achrayut hanedunya alav uvenasat birchuto, im pachata pachatalo, v'im hotira hotira lo, harei zo nikret nichsei tzon barzel. V'im lo kibel achrayut hanedunya alav, ela harei hi birchut haisha, im pachta pachta la, v'im hotira hotira la, harei zo nikret nichsei melog. The text of the ketubah mentions everything owed by the husband to the wife in the event that the marriage ends. This includes not only the Ikar Ketubah and the Tosefet Ketubah that he owes her based on the Takanat Chachamim of Ketubah, but also property brought by the wife into the marriage, typically land or animals, and which returns to her in some form upon the dissolution of the marriage. This property is referred to as Nedunya, or dowry, and consists of two parts. Nichsei Tzon Barzel become the property of the husband for the duration of the marriage, and when the marriage ends, he owes her whatever the property was worth when the marriage began. Barzel means iron, and it alludes to the fixed amount of debt owed for this property. If it goes up in value, the husband keeps the profit, and if it goes down in value, he suffers the loss. Nichsei Melog are property which remain in the ownership of the wife. We learned in Perek Yud Bet that the husband has the right to payrot of his wife's property, and this is what he gets from the nichsei melog. In the case of land, this can be produce growing on the land or rental income, or in the case of an animal, the animal's labor and the wool sheared off its skin. But the husband has no control over the property itself of nichsei melog. This remains untouched and returns to the wife when the marriage ends, whatever its value is at that point. The word melog means plucking, like feathers from a chicken, and alludes to the husband's relationship to this property. He may pluck off the payrot, but has no ownership of the property itself. Halacha Bet adds that any property inherited by the wife after Erusin is a form of nichsei melog, because any property of the wife's not set aside as nichsei tzon barzel at the start of the marriage is automatically considered nichsei melog. The Nedunya as a whole, both Nichsei Tzon Barzel and Nichsei Melog, appear only sporadically in this and the coming Prakim, and will be discussed at greater length in Perek Chaf Bet. The Rambam defines these terms here only to emphasize that the laws of collecting the ketubah in the remainder of this Perek deal not with the Nedunya, but rather with the Ikar and the Tosefet, and henceforth the term ketubah is understood to refer to these parts only. The coming halachot list four leniencies established by Chazal in the manner of paying the ketubah. We begin with the first of these in the second half of halacha gimel. V'chein hitkinu, shim hayad labal sadot tovot veraot uveinoniot, uva haisha ligbot ketubata mimenu, shelo tigbe ela min hara'a shebin chasav, v'hi anikret ziburit. There are three types of land. Idit is high quality, Beinonit is medium quality, and Ziborit is low quality. In general, a creditor who collects a debt from the borrower's land is entitled to take Beinonit. However, as a leniency on the husband or his estate in the case of a ketubah, the wife only gets to collect from Ziborit. The reason for this is that the ketubah is a debt imposed on the husband, not willingly accepted in exchange for cash, like in the case of a borrower, and we don't wish to discourage men from getting married by imposing a very burdensome debt. There is no concern in the reverse direction, that the woman may be discouraged from marrying due to the downgrade from Benoni to Ziborit, because Chazal's assumption in general is that women wish to marry. Recall from Halacha Aleph, the Rambam's emphasis that the dinim of this perek apply only to the ketubah itself, not to the nedunya. Hence, the debt owed to the wife for her nichsei tzon barzel, equivalent to the value of this property when they married, is paid not in Ziborit, but in Benonit like any ordinary debt. The Magid Mishnah notes that the Ramban disagrees, and believes that nichsei tzon barzel are considered part of the ketubah with respect to this din of being repaid in Ziborit. Halacha Dalet. V'cheinit kinu. The second and third leniencies of ketubah apply only to an almana, collecting after her husband's death, not to a grusha, collecting after divorce. First, in the case of an almana, the husband is obviously not around to tell us if he already gave his wife any of her ketubah as an advance payment during his lifetime. Therefore, she herself is required to take a shvua in court with nekitat chefetz, holding a sefer Torah, indicating the seriousness of the shvua, that her husband did not give her anything during his lifetime, and that there is no other reason why the ketubah would not be owed to her in its entirety. Halacha Yud Gimel later in the perek adds that this shvua is not required if the husband specified in the ketubah exactly what should be given to his wife, either a specific plot of land or a specific metaltalin like jewelry or furniture. The second leniency for an almana. A man who divorces his wife does so fully aware that this will cost him the value of the ketubah. Therefore, he owes the entire sum, and we don't deduct the value of the clothing she is wearing, even though he bought her that clothing and she gets to keep it. But when a husband dies, his estate must pay the ketubah even though he never expressed a wish to do so, and therefore we assume that he was makbid to the greatest possible extent, and the clothing worn by his widow at the time of the payment is deducted from the value of the ketubah. The Magid Mishnah adds that also in cases where Beit Din forces a husband to divorce his wife, we've seen several examples of this in the last few prakim, the value of her clothing is deducted, because in these cases too, the husband is not interested in divorcing her. Halacha Hei. V'cheinit kinu, shelo tigbeh almanak tubata elamina karka, ve'ina gova mishevach sheshavchu hanechasim lachar mitat habal. Ve'ein habanot nizonot lachar mitat avihen mishevach sheshavchu nechasim lachar mitato, ve'ina torefet bichtubata mishevach sheishbiach alokeach, af al pi shebal chov govet hashevach, udvarim elu mikulei ketubahin. The leniency of ketubah in this halacha is that unlike a regular debt, which can be collected from any property owned by the borrower, the ketubah is collected specifically from the husband's land, karka, not from his movable property, metaltalin. In a later perek, we'll see that this doesn't generally mean that the woman takes land itself as her ketubah, but rather that rental income or other produce from that land is used to pay the debt. In addition, the woman does not get to collect from shevach, the increase in value of the land, and this itself refers to two cases. First, say her ketubah was 50,000 shekel, and all the husband's land was only worth 40,000 shekel at the moment the marriage terminated. She cannot get paid more than 40,000 shekel, and even if the value of the land rises before she collects, she only gets to collect 40,000 shekel worth of it. Second, land is meshubad, mortgaged, to a ketubah, like to any other debt written in a shtar. And so if the husband sold any land during his marriage, then she may collect it from the buyer if there isn't enough land still belonging to the husband. The term used for mortgaged land seized from a buyer is nechasim meshubadim, and this will come up again in another case later in the perek. But unlike a general creditor, a woman who seizes land from a buyer to collect her ketubah has no right to shevach. If the land was worth 40,000 shekel when the husband sold it, then she only gets to take from the buyer 40,000 shekel worth of land, even if it has risen in value since he purchased it, and even if her ketubah is worth more than 40,000 shekel. We know that there are two different girsaot of our halacha. In our girsa, the leniency of collecting only from karka, like the two leniencies of the last halakha, apply only to an almana and not to a grusha. If this is the case, then the first part of the halakha about not collecting metaltlin is actually no different from any other debt. The rule in general is that ein metaltlin shel yitomim mishtabdim lebal chov. The metaltlin inherited by orphans may not be collected by creditors, and the yarshim of the deceased husband are orphans. But the Magen Mishnah quotes a tshuva of the Rashba, in which he had a different girsa at the beginning of our halacha, shelo tigbe ha'isha, rather than shelo tigbe ha'almana, meaning that even a grusha, whose ex-husband is alive, may not collect from his metaltlin. In explanation of this leniency, the Ran suggests that because the ketubah is a debt which has no fixed due date and may in fact never be collected at all if the wife dies before the wife from the start does not rely on any property belonging to the husband except land, which cannot be moved to another location. Halacha Vav. V'chein mikulei ketubah shetitol ha'isha ketubata min ha'pachot shebamatbeot. Ketzad, nasa isha b'makom v'gersha b'makom acher, im hayu me'ot m'kom ha'nisuin tovot mime'ot m'kom ha'gerushin, noten la mime'ot m'kom ha'gerushin. V'im hayu me'ot m'kom ha'gerushin tovot mime'ot m'kom ha'nisuin, noten la mime'ot m'kom ha'nisuin. The final leniency of the payment of the ketubah is mentioned in the Gemara as an explicit consequence of the fact that ketubah is derabanan. And therefore, while the Rambam accepts it as part of his general shita, that ketubah is derabanan, those Rishonim who believe that ketubah is d'oraita reject it. This relates to a case where a man marries a woman in one place and divorces her elsewhere. The ketubah includes a certain sum expressed in ma'ot, but the unit of currency called a ma'a changes in value from place to place, depending on the exact proportion of silver relative to other metals. In an ordinary debt, we would determine exactly how much is owed based on the value of a ma'a in the place where the debt was created, which in this case would be the place of the marriage. But in a ketubah, as a leniency on the husband, we go by whichever of the two places has the ma'ot of lower value. A caveat, in his Perush HaMishnayot, the Rambam adds that all this assumes that even using the less valuable ma'ot, the total amount of the ketubah is at least the minimum of 200 zuz for a betula, or 100 zuz for a be'ula. This amount represents a minimum which we cannot go below under any circumstances. The Rama adds that as we saw earlier regarding Ziborit, the leniency of this halacha applies only to the ketubah itself, and not to the Nechsei Tzon Barzel. The amount owed for those is evaluated based on the place where the couple married, as would be done for any other debt. Halacha Zayin. Tiknu ha-geonim b'chol ha-yeshivot, shetiyeh isha gova ketubata achar mot bala af min ha-metaltalin, kederech shetiknu lebal chov ligbot min ha-metaltalin, ufashta takana zo berov Yisrael, v'chein sha'ar tnei ketuba, kulam kichduma hein v'yeshnan b'metaltalin kakarka. We learned in Halacha Hey that fundamentally the ketubah of an almana is collected only from karka, just like any creditor collecting a debt from the estate of a deceased debtor may only take karka. But the Gaonim changed this din. During the time of Chazal, the vast majority of a typical person's property was land. But this changed by the time of the Gaonim, as more Jews moved from agriculture to business. So the Gaonim ruled that any creditor may collect metaltlin from Yitomim, and this includes the Almana as well when she collects her ketubah. This is true of all the other Tanai ketubah as well, the obligations of the estate of the deceased husband to his widow and her children that we will learn about in the next several prakim. The Rambam believes there is an exception of one Tanai ketubah, which is still collected only from Karka, and we'll get to this in Perek Yud Tet. We note that this halacha supports our girsa and halacha hey, that only an almana didn't originally get to collect from a metaltlin, unlike the girsa of the Rashba, in which even a grusha didn't get to do so, because the words in our halacha of achar mot bala clearly refer to an almana. It must be that the Rashba didn't have these words in his girsa of our halacha. Halacha Chet says that even after these Takanat Gaonim, it is better for the sake of transparency that the text of the ketubah explicitly mention that collection can be made even from metaltlin, rather than to assume that the husband is aware of the Takanat Gaonim. In Halacha Tet, the Rambam expresses serious concern that if this clause doesn't appear in the Ketubah and the husband claims not to know of the Takanat HaGaonim, we may not be able to allow collection from Metaltalin, because the Takanat HaGaonim is not stronger than the original Takana of Chazal to limit collection of the Ketubah to Karka. But the Kesef Mishnah quotes the Rivash, who understands the Rambam to mean that as long as the husband did not deviate from the usual text of the Ketubah in a way which indicates that he is excluding Metaltalin, the wife may collect from Metaltalin when the Ketubah comes due. The text of our Ketubah indeed explicates that the collection may be from Nechasim di'itlo nachrayut udeletlo nachrayut, Aramaic for both Karka and Metaltalin. Halacha Yud Aleph. Kishemashbi'in beit din o hayorshim et almana kishetavo ligbot ktubata ein mashbi'in ota ela chutz lebeit din mipnei shebatei dinin hayu nimna'in milahashbi'a shechoshishin la shema lo tidakdek al atzma bishvua ve'im ratzu hayitomim lahadira noderet lehen kol ma sheyirtzu umadirin ota beit din ve'achar kach notela ktubata. We saw in Halacha Dalet that an almana must take a shvua benekitat chefetz before collecting her ketubah, that she received no advance payment from her husband before his death. But in practice, it was found that an almana would often not take this shvua seriously. She would justify to herself swearing falsely, on the grounds that she had done very much for the atonement during their father's lifetime, whether they are her own children or not, and therefore she is entitled to her full ketubah despite any advance she received while the husband was alive. Two alternative solutions arose. One was for the almana to take the shvua outside Beit Din, but in earshot of the dayanim. A shvua outside Beit Din is not as severe and doesn't include Shem Hashem, so this was the preferred option if the atonim trusted her or didn't mind paying extra if she was lying. Alternatively, the atonim would require her to take a neder rather than a shvua. A neder relates indirectly to the claim that she didn't receive anything from the husband. She says something like, foods X, Y, and Z should be forbidden to me for all time if I received any part of my ketubah. While violating a neder is no more severe halachically than a false shvua outside Beit Din, women generally took nedarim more seriously, and this improved the likelihood that the almana would tell the truth. Halacha Yud Bet. Meita ha'almana kodem shetishava. Ein yorsheha yorshin miktubata klum, she'ein la ktuba ad shetishava. V'im niseit kodem shetishava, harezo nishbat achar hanisuim, venotelet kol zman shetirtze, aval einano deret venotelet, shema yafer habal. If the almana herself dies before taking the shvua or the neder, then her inheritors, yorshin, have no access to her ktuba. The shvua is a prerequisite, and they have no way to make it themselves, even if they claim to know that she received no advance payment, because of the principle that ein adam morish shvua albanav, an obligation to swear is personal and cannot be bequeathed to another person. If the almana remarried before collecting her ketubah, then she may take a shvua at that point, but she may not take a neder. This is an ineffective method of getting the truth out of her, because her new husband can always be mefer her neder. Starting with Halacha Yud Daled, the next several halachot discuss cases where any woman collecting her ketubah, even a grusha, needs to take a shvua before doing so. Hapogemet ketubata, lo tipara ela bishvua. Keitzad, hotzia shtar ketubah sheyesh bo elef zuz. Habal omer nitkabla hakol, vehi omeret lo nitkabalti ela kach vekach. Afilu yesh alea edim b'miktzat shenatla, v'afilu dikteka b'cheshbon ma shenatla b'chatzi chatzi pruta, lo titol ha'sha'ar ela b'shvua. Suppose the ketubah is for 1,000 zuz, and the husband claims that he paid it already. If she denies it, then she may collect the entire amount. But if she concedes that she received some portion of it, this is called pogemet ketubata. She damages the shtar ketubah, which should be her instrument of collection, by admitting that it is partially paid. She must take a shvua in order to collect the amount which remains of the ketubah according to her claim. The same din holds whenever a creditor wields a shtar against a debtor and admits that he collected part of it. He must take a shvua in order to collect the rest. The Taz on the Shulchan Aruch claims that this requirement of shvua is relatively weak, and therefore, if the grusha dies before taking a shvua, then her yorshim may collect the ketubah without any shvua at all. Halacha Yud Zayin, a little later, mentions a variation of this case in which the woman may collect everything she claims without a shvua. If the ketubah is for 1,000 zuz, and the husband claimed it has been paid, while the wife claims that nothing has been paid, but that the real agreement between them was only for 500 zuz. She explains the 1,000 zuz written in the ketubah as amana haita beni leveno, an intentional exaggeration, which is mutually agreed upon, just to make the ketubah look more impressive. Since she does not claim that anything was paid, this is not considered pogemen ketubata, and she gets to collect the entire 500 without a shvua. Halacha tetvav. Amar habal nitkabla hakol, v'hi omeret lo nitkabalti klum, ve'ed echad me'id aleh shenitkabla hakol o miktzat, lo tipara kol ketubata ela bishvua. If the husband claims to have paid the ketubah, and she denies it completely, but one witness testifies that the ketubah or part of it was indeed paid, then she must take a shvua in order to neutralize the testimony of the witness and collect her ketubah. Here too, the same din holds whenever a creditor wields a shtar against a debtor, and one witness testifies that the shtar was repaid. The cases of Halachot Yudal and Tetvav that we just learned seem at first glance to be very similar to the situations of Mode B'Miktzat and Eid Echad, in which Midoraita there must be a Shvua taken Beitin. But in fact, they are not the same, and these Shvuot are entirely Midorabanan. A Shvua D'Oraita is only required when the defendant swears in order to avoid paying, like if Reuven claims money from Shimon, and either Shimon admits to part of the claim, Mode B'Miktzat, or he denies it completely, but there is one witness supporting Reuven's claim, Eid Echad. But our halachot are examples of Nishba V'Notel. The woman takes a Shvua in order to collect her ketubah, or whatever remains of it. The phenomenon of Nishba V'Notel is Midrabanan, and therefore these shvuot are not d'oraita. Halacha tetzayin. Hanifrat shelo b'fanav, lo tipara ela b'shvua. Ketzad, harei shegeresh et ishto v'halachlo, beitin yordin lin chasav achar shetishava, umagbin ota ktubata, v'hu shiye b'makom rachok shiyesh lam torach lo dio, aval im karov hadabar lo dio, sholchino omodin oto, im lo yavo tishava v'tito. The third case in which a woman must take a shvuah before collecting her ketubah is when the husband is away and cannot be reached. He left town after divorcing his wife and without paying her ketubah. In this case, Beit Din requires her to take a shvuah that she has not received her ketubah, and then they seize part of the husband's property in order to pay her. Here again, the same din applies whenever a shtar comes due and the debtor is not around to pay it. The creditor may take a shvuah in front of Beit Din, at which point Beit Din seizes property to pay the debt. Halacha Yutet. Amar Habal Me'atzmo, Tishav Ili Altanati, Omrinla, Hishavi Utli, the Tishava Benikitat Chefetz, Hitnaima Shetik Bektubata Belo Shvua, Oshehine Menet Koma Shetiton, Gova Mimenu Shalobi Shvua Klau, Aval Imbati Pram Yoshav, Tishava Vacharkach Titol. In any situation where the woman should not need to take a shvuah, like if the husband claims with no witnesses to have paid part or all of her ketubah, and she denies receiving anything, then he may nonetheless demand a shvuah from her, and Beit Din requires her to take a shvuah benikitat chefetz. Again, the same din applies whenever a creditor wields a shtar against a debtor who claims without witnesses to have repaid the debt. The debtor must pay, but first he may demand of the creditor, ishtabadli d'lo praticha, swear that I didn't pay you back already, and only if the creditor takes that shvua does the debtor have to pay. Conversely, the husband may stipulate with his wife, when they married, that she will be believed to collect her ketubah without a shvua, no matter what each of them claims at that point. In this case, she doesn't need to take a shvua in any of the cases we've discussed since Halacha Yudalad. But if the husband dies and she collects from his yarshim, then his stipulation does not apply, and she has to take a shvua in order to collect from the yarshim. Halacha chaf, hitna ima shetia notelet mi yorshav belo shvua, o shetia nemenet al yorshav, harei zo notelet mehen belo shvua, avalim ba litrof nechasim shubadim, lo titrof ela bishvua, va'af al pi shamina habal, she'ein tnai habal mo'il ela alav val yorshav, aval lahafsid mamon achirim eino mo'il. The husband may formulate his original stipulation, exempting his wife from a shvuah, to include even claims made by his yarshim against his wife, in which case she may collect even from them without a shvuah. But if she wishes to seize land which her husband sold, nechasim mishubadim, then no stipulation of his can exempt her from taking a shvuah to the buyers, as a shvuah is always required when seizing nechasim mishubadim. According to the Rambam, a stipulation on the part of the husband can be binding only on himself and on his yorshim, but cannot require a third party, like a buyer, to give up on his right to a shvuah before losing the land he purchased. The Raiva disagrees. The stipulation is part of the husband's ketubah arrangement, and any potential buyer must be aware of it and taken into account before deciding to purchase his land at all. We summarize Halachot Chaf Aleph through Chaf Dalet. As we mentioned in Perek Yud Bet, the ketubah is a tenai beitin, meaning that even if it isn't written, it is a binding commitment on the husband. In places which nonetheless have the custom to write the ketubah, a widow or divorcee can collect her ketubah even many years after the end of her marriage, as long as she produces the document. And conversely, she may not collect anything when she doesn't produce the document, even on the day her marriage ends. In a place where the custom is not to write the ketubah, but to rely on the Tanai Beit Din, this is only effective for the Iker ketubah of 200 or 100 zuz, not for any Tosefet ketubah. The woman may only collect the Tosefet if she provides proof that it exists at all and that she hasn't collected it yet. There is one limitation on the collection of the Iker ketubah in a place where the ketubah isn't written. An almana who does not depend on the Yarshim may only claim it within 25 years of her husband's passing. After that time, we assume that she has forgiven the debt. If she depends on the Yarshim to an unusual degree, like if she lives in their home, or she lives in her father's home and they bring her food there, then she may claim even after 25 years that she was embarrassed to demand the ketubah from them earlier because of the extent of her dependence upon them. A grusha may claim her ketubah indefinitely, like any other creditor. Halacha Chaf Hei. Hi omeret betula niseiti, v'ikar ketubati matayim. Vabal o yorshav omrim beulani seit the ein la elameya im yesh edim shra'u shasula haminagot shnagu anshei ota ha'ir la sotan livtula kegon minei simcha o malbush yadua o ktarim o shar dvarim she'ein osim kein ela livtula harei zo notelet matayim vim ein la edim vaze notelet meya vim haya habal kayam yesh la lahashbio shvuat ha'torah sharei hoda b'miktzat ha'tana ונאמן הקטן להעיד בגודלו ולומר, זכור אני, כשהייתי קטן, שנעשה לפלונית מנהג הבתולות. וכל הדברים האלו במקום שאין כותבין כתובה, כמו שאמרנו. In a place where no ketubah is written, it can happen after the marriage ends that there is a debate how much the Iker ketubah was. She claims that it is 200 zuz because she married as a betula, while he claims that it is 100 zuz because she married as a beula. We check if there are still any witnesses who saw their wedding and can testify if the usual practices of the marriage of a betula were performed there. In this matter, an adult is believed to testify even about things he remembers seeing when he was a child. If there are such witnesses, then she receives 200 zuz as she claims. If not, then she receives only 100 zuz. And if the husband is alive, he takes a shvua d'oraita of moda b'miktzat. She claimed 200, and he admits to and pays only half of her claim. The Ravid objects that there shouldn't be a shvua d'oraita here, because there is no shvua on karka, or even on shibud karka, and the ketubah is an example of shibud karka. The husband's land was mortgaged to it from the beginning of the marriage. To explain the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah suggests that the Ravid would be correct before the Takanan Gaonim from Halacha Zayin, when the ketubah could only be collected from land. But once the Gaonim allowed the collection to be from Metatlin as well, the Shibud is not only on Karka, and therefore there can be a Shvuat Moda B'miktzat Mida Oraita. This doesn't resolve the difficulty with the Rambam, because as the Lecha Mishnah points out, there is a Gemara Masechet Bav Metzia which implies that even when the Shibud covers both Karka and Metaltalin, the Shavuot Modeb Miksat still isn't Midoraita because of the Shibud Karkaot. There is a piece in Chidush Yerushalayim Chaim Alevi on this halacha, which addresses this question, but his answer gets into topics related to Shavua, which are beyond the scope of this perek. The listener is encouraged to look at it independently. Halacha Chaf Vav. Haisha Shamra Levala Gerashtani. Nemenet, Shena Miza Pane Bifne Bala. Lefichach, Haisha Shotzia Shtar Ktuba, Ve'eni Maget, Vamra Levala Gerashtani, Vavad Giti, Tainli Ktubati, Vuomer Lo Gerashti, Chavli Taini Ktuba. Aval Eino Notena Tosefet, Achatavi Raya, Shigeresh, Oyatza Get Imaktuba, Mitachat Yada. We learned earlier in Perak Dalid that a woman is believed if she tells her husband to his face that he divorced her, because we assume that a woman would not have the chutzpah to lie to him so brazenly. Therefore, if she takes out her ketubah, but does not have a get, and tells her husband that he divorced her, but she lost the get and is now claiming her ketubah, then she is believed. But this is only true for the ikar ketubah, and she does not collect any of the tosefet ketubah until she brings stronger proof of the divorce. The Ravid in his Asaga here argues doubly on the Rambam. First, there is no reason to distinguish between the ikar and the tosefet. But second, he rejects the Rambam's entire application of the woman's believability about her divorce. For the Ravid, she is only believed in a very limited case. If she already remarried based on her claim to her husband's face that he divorced her, we do not force her to divorce her second husband. But we do not let her remarry l'chatchila, nor to collect her ketubah, on the basis of this claim. Most of the remainder of the parak consists of cases in which a woman has multiple gittin or multiple ketubot or both, and she wishes to collect each ketubah that she has in her possession. The din in each case is determined based on the most likely reconstruction we can make of how she came to be in possession of all these documents. We don't have time to learn the details, but the listener is encouraged to learn the details independently in Halachot Chavtet and Lamed. We'll end with an interesting din in Halacha Lamed Aleph. Haisha nemenet lomar, meit bali kidei shetinaseh. Kamo shit ba'er bilchot gerushin. Umitnaya ketubah shim tinaseh la'acher achar moto, titho ma shekatav la biktubata. Lefichach, im ba'al beit din ve'amra, meit bali, hatiruni linaseh, ve'lo yizkira shem ketubah ba'olam, matirin ota linaseh, umashbin ota, ve'notin la ketubata. We'll learn at the end of Hilchot Gerushin that a woman is believed and allowed to remarry when she says that her husband died. It is assumed that she would not make such a consequential claim without being certain that it is true. Because if her husband is in fact still alive, then any children she bears from another man would be mamzerim. But is her reliability about her husband's death effective for her to collect her ketubah? The Gemara Masechet Yevamot says that we rely in this instance on the language of the ketubah, which explicitly links her permission to remarry with her right to collect. Therefore, since she's allowed to remarry based on her own testimony, she may also collect her ketubah, after the usual shvua required of an almana that we learned about in Halacha Dalet. But the Rambam adds that this is only true if she comes to court asking only to be allowed to remarry, and she mentions the ketubah only afterwards or not at all. If she asks Beit Din only for her ketubah, or first for her ketubah and only afterwards for permission to remarry, then she is not believed at all, because we assume that her primary motivation is to get money rather than to remarry, and she is not believed at all in these circumstances.
Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.